After 8 years, Massachusetts will have a new governor come 2023. This week, one of the state's most popular governors ever, Charles Duane Baker Jr., announced that he will not run for re-election. You're listening to the review of this week's news on And Another Thing from New England Public Media. Derek Kennedy is off today. I'm Maya Schwader. Also ahead, we'll look at what is in the $4 billion deal in federal relief money that's coming to the governor's desk, and vaccine passports may be rolling out soon. What took the state so long? Let's welcome our guests. We have the executive editor of Reminder Publications, Mike Dobbs. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Berkshire Eagle Investigations editor, Larry Parnas.
Hey, how are y'all?
And for the first time, we welcome GBH News political reporter, Adam Riley. He is also the host of a new weekly program on Massachusetts politics called Talking Politics that is debuting tonight on GBH television. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So let us start with the biggest story in state politics this year. That, of course, is the word that came earlier this week from Governor Charlie Baker that he will not run for re-election next year. And perhaps even slightly more surprising, his lieutenant governor, Karen Polito, also will not be running for any office next cycle either. Baker said that he loves his job, and both he and Polito thought seriously about running, but ultimately decided to devote this next year to focusing on pandemic recovery efforts instead.
We believe it's most important that we spend the next year focusing on that and not focusing on, let's call it the discourse, and that's probably an insult to the word discourse, that comes with political campaigning.
If you missed our episode earlier this week, it was all about this. We dove into some of what was behind Baker's decision, the future of the GOP in Massachusetts, and we heard from three of the current Democratic candidates for governor on their thoughts. You can find that episode on our website, nepm.org. Panel, the immediate question now is, of course, what comes next? Who comes next? All eyes are now on State Attorney General Maura Healey. She has gone out of her way to praise Baker and said she will make a decision, quote unquote, soon. Adam, what do we think soon means?
I think soon will mean whatever Maura Healey needs it to mean. I'm going to guess, though, that being said, that we'll hear from her one way or another within a week or two, especially because I was struck, as you guys may have been as well, there was this tsunami of speculation that was launched after Baker said he wasn't going to seek a third term. And all these names, including many that hadn't even occurred to me as possible candidates, were being bandied about all of a sudden, including Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, former Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, who hinted on Bloomberg earlier today as we're speaking that he was thinking to some extent about running for governor. So I think she's put off making a decision for a long time. I think now she's going to have to act and act pretty quickly. So I'll predict within a couple of weeks.
Do we think that there's some pressure off of her now that Baker has said that he is not stepping into the race? Mike, what do you think?
Well, yes. The column I wrote for this week's edition characterized a Baker versus Healey contest as King Kong versus Godzilla. These are two people who are political heavyweights in this Commonwealth. And I think that that would have been an incredibly interesting slugfest for the next year. So, yes, I think that she must be breathing a sigh of relief, no matter what her decision might be, that she won't have to go through that.
Which one is King Kong and which one is Godzilla in that?
I reserve the right to remain silent on that.
Well, Larry, a question for you. As Adam mentioned, another big name that came up is former Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. He's now U.S. Secretary of Labor. He is quite well known in the Boston part of Massachusetts. What is his name ID like out in Berkshire County?
Oh, that's a good point. His reach is not super out here, but people know who he is. He's, you know, a charismatic big city mayor. I'm personally disappointed that we won't get to see a Healey-Baker matchup. I think that really would have been interesting. I also am surprised, as I think you all are, that Karen Polito opted out. I thought that her pride in having visited 351 cities and towns as part of this community compact program that she and the governor created, and I saw her at some of those, I thought she's been a candidate all the way along here. So I'm not sure about their accounts that that she never intended to put herself up as a successor. I find it refreshing, actually, that Baker is at 65 self-imposing a term limit here. I think the wise exercise of power is sometimes to let it go.
With Baker out of the running and with Polito out of the running, do we think that it is inevitable that a Democrat is going to be the next governor of the state? Adam, why don't you go first?
I'm loath to say something that definitive because I tend to be wrong when I make overly declaratory statements. But that being said, I have a really hard time seeing Jeff Diehl, the only Republican candidate currently in the race. I have a hard time seeing him winning, primarily because he is incredibly proud of having received the endorsement of former President Trump. And I get that that puts him where the Republican Party is nationally and where the Republican Party here in Massachusetts is. But President Trump is wildly unpopular here in the state. He lost big to Hillary Clinton in 2016. He lost even more badly to Joe Biden in 2020. And I am still struggling to wrap my brain around why Diehl and the Mass GOP, I think, see Trump's backing as an unalloyed asset. I mean, it was something that Diehl, in his statement about Charlie Baker not seeking a third term, he said, you know, I disagreed with him on policy, like him personally. He was very quick to say, I have received the endorsement of Donald Trump. And I just see that in the general election as a negative. Having said all that, there does seem to be an increasing belief among people who watch this stuff, or an increasing sense that there are going to be people who may jump in as more electable Republican alternatives to Diehl, possibly Andrew Lelling, the former U.S. attorney, possibly other people. But if they do, they're going to face, to some extent, the same problem Baker faced, which is that the Republican Party, likely Republican primary voters, they want what Diehl is selling. So I think if you have a allegedly more electable candidate jumping in, the question for them is going to be like it was going to be for Baker. Can they make it through the primary?
Of the three Democratic candidates that are in the running right now, we've got, as was mentioned, Ben Downing, Senator Sonia Chang Diaz, Professor Danielle Allen. What is their clout relative to a Maura Healey or a Marty Walsh entering the race? Do we think they last?
No, no. No, and
please expand. Yeah,
no, if you're talking about the sitting attorney general or the former mayor of Boston, now secretary of labor, versus well-intentioned, intelligent, good-hearted people with no name recognition, you know what the outcome is going to be. And I have no doubt. I've interviewed Downing a couple of times. I'm impressed by him. I'm impressed by some of the things he says. And the other two candidates also are impressive people. But to build the campaign base that they need, if they are facing within their own party people like the Attorney General or the Secretary of Labor, I'm sorry, they do not have a chance. And I don't want to sound nasty about it, but that's the truth.
Adam, your thoughts?
I'm going to strike a slightly more open-minded note here. I agree that they would have a rough go of it if you had a Healey or a Walsh in the race. That being said, Sonia Chang Diaz, to start with, has a lot of the energy, at least in these parts, that we associate with the campaigns of Michelle Wu, the new mayor of Boston, and prior to her, Ed Markey, when he was seeking re-election for the Senate. A lot of young, progressive, further to the left supporters who are extremely passionate, which is not an asset, I don't think, at this moment in politics, to be taken lightly. Downing is very attuned to environmental issues. That's an asset in and of itself that makes him worth taking seriously. And I would also point out the track record in Massachusetts when it comes to attorney generals moving on to higher office isn't terrific. Scott Harshbarger tried and failed. Tom Riley tried and failed. Martha Coakley tried and failed.
You're listening to And Another Thing on New England Public Media. This is our Friday roundup of the week's news. I'm Maya Schwader. With us this week, we have Berkshire Eagle Investigations Editor Larry Parnas, GBH News political reporter Adam Riley, and the executive editor of Reminder Publications, Mike Dobbs. We just heard about Governor Baker stepping back from the race, choosing to spend more time focusing on the pandemic recovery work that he says needs his attention in the next year, and that is a higher priority for him than campaigning for office. Right now, there is a $4 billion plan making its way to the governor's desk that lays out how Massachusetts should be allocating and spending federal COVID relief funds. It includes payments of up to $2,000 for low-income essential workers and a $5 million allotment for the unemployment insurance trust fund. Now, last month, the legislature ended formal sessions. It looked like it could be held up for months. Adam, do you have any insight as to how they managed to get this deal together now this time around?
I don't want to sound overly cynical here. I think they managed to do it because they knew it would be an absolute disaster in terms of public opinion and public relations if they didn't get their act together. The legislature has, unfortunately, this really maddening habit of doing a lot of important work at the last minute and giving themselves extensions if they can't get it done at the last minute, you know, to have a little more time to do what they need to do. And I think it is a source of frustration to people across the state, across the political spectrum, that they tend to do really big, really important stuff this way. I don't like meeting deadlines, and I'm not good at meeting deadlines, but they have put themselves in a position to hold the purse strings for the state, which is an incredibly, incredibly important job, especially in the midst of a pandemic. And I think they just knew it was going to look really bad if they kept waiting longer.
Let's talk a little bit about what's in the bill. As we've said, there's some money for essential workers, there's unemployment fund, there's also money allocated for mental health, for various infrastructure projects. Larry, we know that there has been some frustration out in Western Massachusetts about how much of this was going to be seen out in that region. What is the reaction right now? What are people hoping to get out of this?
I spent some time this morning going through this 165-page piece of legislation, and the top of it is these big buckets of tens or hundreds of millions. You know, it takes a long time to lay out how to spend $4 billion. It's everything. You know, the things you mentioned, it's support for hospitals, it's broadband investment. My eyes began to cross reading this, thinking, what wish list project did not make it into this bill? And wow, if you're the state rep or sen in that area, you better run for cover. There's just an incredible amount of things. $20,000 for a new stove for the American Legion in Saugus. So, I mean, it's all over the place. Berkshire County did pretty well, but it's fascinating just to read the earmarks in this and think about the transactions within the state house on how this all got put together. I don't think, in terms of what people think of this, I don't think it's registering yet. These numbers are so big. It's a $3.998 billion package. So they couldn't put in another $2 million to get it to an even four. Come on.
What's $2 million between politicians, truly?
It's a rounding error.
Mike, let's turn back to the politics for a moment here. As Larry was just pointing out, it seems like there was a little bit of a pork barrel process that may have happened behind the scenes. There's certainly going to be some jostling over who gets the credit, who gets to run on what. How do we think this is going to end up playing out as we are looking towards next year's elections?
There will be a flurry of emails to the press describing how each state rep or state senator managed to bring back the bacon. My concern, and Larry, I congratulate you, sir, for tackling that bill this morning. I haven't had the time to do it as yet, but I will. My concern is, I'm just taking a look here at one of the reports about $100 million to water and sewer infrastructure, environmental infrastructure. That's great. That's great. We need that. No two doubts about it. But I'm wondering how many shovel-ready projects are represented by that sum. How many municipalities have identified and done all that to be able to say, when that money comes down to us, we are ready to implement it. It's one thing to allocate this money, and you're absolutely right, the legislators will want to take appropriate credit for everything, but it's another thing to actually see it being used.
I also think it's worth noting that, and I guess Larry hinted at this when he talked about what sounds like a very nice stove going to Saugus, there are going to be some expenditures in here that people may end up wanting to run away from. One thing that I was struck by is the juxtaposition of $6.5 million spent to address problems at the intersection of Mass Ave and Melnia Cass Boulevard here in Boston, which is the epicenter of the opioid crisis in eastern Massachusetts, also homelessness, mental illness, converging crises. $6.5 million in this ARPA package is going to go to that. $5 million is going to go to spending down the debt obligation of the Edward M. Kennedy Institute for the U.S. Senate. I don't understand how you have comparable amounts of money being allocated to those two things. You drive by Mass and Cass, it's an unbelievable case study in human misery. And I don't understand, for example, why all the money from the Edward M. Kennedy Institute's debt obligations is not going to Mass and Cass instead. And it wouldn't surprise me as more people pour over this stuff if more examples like that surface.
Regarding recovery, what else does the administration need to do?
Obviously, when you take a look at things, you realize that we still have a real issue with vaccination rates. We still have a real issue with supporting a medical infrastructure as it still deals with the pandemic, with the ongoing parade of variants that we keep hearing about every other week. That basic kind of, we have to get back to quote unquote normal, that I'm wondering how much of this bill is going to address in a very immediate way. And for me, as long as we are dealing with mask mandates, maybe a vaccination mandates, maybe not vaccination mandates, we have an ongoing problem that sort of blunts everything else that we're dealing with in society today.
When we come back, more legal sparring between the mayor and the Springfield City Council over control of the police department and vaccine passports are coming from Massachusetts. This is And Another Thing. Stay with us. Welcome back to And Another Thing's review of this week's news from New England Public Media. Dara Kennedy is off today. I'm Maya Schwader. Our panel today, GBH News political reporter Adam Riley. We have executive editor of Reminder Publications, Mike Dobbs, and Berkshire Eagle investigations editor, Larry Parnas. Before the break, we were talking about pandemic recovery efforts. We talked about this new variant, the Omicron variant. We still have yet to see what that holds in store for New England. And this week, we should note that Massachusetts had its highest positive COVID-19 test rate in nearly a year. Medical experts say that's likely due to exposures during the Thanksgiving holiday period. Now, the state is trying to make it easier for vaccinated residents to prove their status. Governor Baker this week announced that Massachusetts and several other states are very close to releasing a system that will allow you to display a QR code that can be scanned that will show your vaccine status. They are not going to make this system mandatory. We've seen that New York already has the Excelsior Pass. Virginia also rolled out a similar QR code. States like New Jersey and Minnesota have apps that allow you to show your vaccine record. Larry, do you expect that people are going to be embracing this technology?
If you want to go to some music clubs and go out and have some fun, you're going to have to be showing that you're vaccinated. Is it just a matter of convenience? I think people are ready to go with this. You know, how many times do you want to pull that card out? Plus, people are already taking pictures and putting them on their phones and showing it that way. Just making that a little simpler and more uniform, I think, would be embraced.
Adam, is it fair to ask why it took so long?
I think it is. And I think it's possible that one reason it took so long is that the governor was thinking about running for a third term and didn't necessarily want to roll out what I think is a pretty benign piece of technology that might have prompted a hue and cry on the right fringes of the GOP, which has now actually become the heart of the GOP here in Massachusetts and elsewhere. I think that's one possible reason. I can tell you I will be embracing it as someone who lost my first vaccination card and had to handwrite the date of my first vaccination on the second card I got. I think this is a great idea. I'm not as convinced as Larry is that everyone is going to be into using it. I think the fatigue that a lot of people are feeling, even if they've been concerned up until this point, is very real. So I'm not as confident that people will embrace this.
Mike, with the vaccine stuck at 70%, do you agree with Larry that people will be willing to download something like this if they may have not been willing to get the vaccine in the first place?
How I feel about this latest proposal is that I think the people who are not interested in the vaccination are going to reject it. And I think they're going to criticize it, as Adam just said. This is preaching to the choir. And yes, I will be happy to have something on my phone that I can then show if I need to it. But I'm an old guy who got my shots and I got my booster and I have a mask in my pocket all the time. So I don't think I'm the target market for this. They know that a person like me is going to implement it. It's other folks who have other beliefs about this that I think will reject it. Yes.
Finally, the sometimes contentious relationship between the Springfield City Council and Mayor Dominic Sarno continues apace. The city council says that the city charter says the police department is supposed to be controlled by a group of commissioners, not one single commissioner, as is current practice. A lower court earlier ruled in favor of the city council's view. Now Mayor Sarno is appealing this decision to the Supreme Judicial Court, which will hear arguments on Monday. City Council lawyer Tom Lesser says so far, the judges have clearly agreed with the city council.
The Superior Court ruled that he was clearly wrong. His arguments had no merit whatsoever, so we're particularly surprised he chose to appeal.
Sarno instead argues that the city council is trying to interfere with his executive authority to manage city government. So, Mike, what is at stake here for the mayor as he's trying to push this as far as he can?
The attorney that you just ran the quote from obviously doesn't know Dominic Sarno, and I am surprised about that. The mayor has been committed to this position for years. He believes that what he has undertaken is actually a reform move that gets rid of a historically corrupt police commission and puts decision-making into the hands of a law enforcement professional, that is the police commissioner, formerly known as the police chief. He has cited in the past that the police commission, the civilian police commission, was not effective in actually managing the police department. He will exhaust every legal avenue he has in order to keep this in place. And that is his nature, especially about this issue.
Larry, any thoughts to add?
I do follow this issue. Clearly, there's been problems that need to be solved. It has this political layer that I wish could come out of it, but of course that's impossible. You know, Sarno takes this make me attitude toward this. I think somewhere in the mayor's heart, he must see this as a political challenge to his power in the last 2 years with the concerns about ending police brutality nationwide. And Springfield has been a laboratory of that, as the Department of Justice pointed out just a year or so ago. So the mayor's legal options may be close to ending.
It's been quite a week. Thank you all so much. Once again, this week's panel was Executive Editor of Reminder Publications, Mike Dobbs. Great to have you with us.
Thank you.
We also had Berkshire Eagle Investigations Editor, Larry Parnas.
Thanks, Maya, and everyone.
And for the first time, we had GBH News political reporter, Adam Riley. Good luck with your new program, Talking Politics, on GBH Television tonight.
Thank you. This was great.
Don't forget, the conversation continues on social media. You can find us at AAT on NEPM. And you can find any of our past programs visiting our website at nepm.org. I'm Maya Schwader. Thanks to our team here. And we invite you back again next week for more of And Another Thing.